I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Wood Talk. Now here are three guys who always turn the other cheek when cleaning up tenons. Mark, Shannon, and Matt.
What's up, everybody? It's show number 540, and on today's show, we're talking about why you'll go poor trying to sell lumber, torrified wood doors, mortising by hand, and good uses for flooring offcuts. But before we get to that, we want to let you know that Wood Talk is brought to you by Rockler. Rockler's been helping customers create with confidence for over 65 years. Rockler's giving away a $250 gift card to one lucky Wood Talk listener. Enter for your chance to win before January 31st at rockler.com/woodtalk.
And if you want to help support the show, you can totally do so by going to patreon.com/woodtalk and signing up to become a patron of the show. This time we're thanking Patrick Bordrillwax. Well, you know, when Bordrillo is not good enough for you.
You went for
you
it.
You can get a
nice
name upgrade. There you go. Enjoy, Patrick. Mark Jones, Mike Rochburns, and Christopher Davidson.
Do you think we should just blow past that one and pretend we didn't know what he was going for there?
That's what we're doing. I read, yep. with a straight
too
face.
Too late now.
Like it's any other name.
Uh-huh.
That's easy to read.
Yep. Okay. Good. Good, good.
Good. Job. Thank well you, done. Patrons. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. All right. So this is a dining table episode where we're going to pick a topic and just kind of noodle around with it, stick our finger in it, see what's going on in there.
Oh, my God. What did you just say?
Okay. We're going to talk about lumber sales. I feel like Matt now with my cheeks hurting.
Please never grow okay. up. Just don't do it. I will never respect you if you grow up.
I'm trying not. Like, if I haven't grown up by now, probably not going to happen. You know, you would think kids would have done that.
I think
if
that
it's going to happen.
It takes me the other way with kids. I don't know.
Yeah.
Have you been around kids before? They're not very mature.
No. Well, it gets more fun when they get past the point. Like, Ava's still at that point where I'll say something and she'll look at her mom and she'll look back at me and she's like, is he serious? Like, she knows to check. Mateo is at the age now where he immediately gets it. Like, I'll say something, I'll just look at him and we do that like bro nod to each other. Like, he gets it. He knows what's up. It's good. Anyway, so the dining table episode today, this is inspired by my possibly ill-advised venture into wood sales. And
wait a minute, who advised you?
Who the hell are you talking to?
I was gonna say, I seem to remember that Matt and I were both against this idea.
It was Tim Fuller who advised me to do it.
Oh, well, good. Yes, your
supplier. So blame him.
Good idea.
Yeah, the supplier. Funny how that works.
Nice.
Nice. So Tim's a good dude and he's got lots of good wood. And it seemed like a neat idea. Like, hey, we got this new space. Maybe there's something else we could do with it. I like wood. I need to store wood. Why not store a little extra wood and then sell what I don't need? And we were going to go down
so
this path.
Sounds so simple. How
it
hard
does.
Could it be?
It really, like a monkey could do it, Matt. Really.
I don't disagree with that.
Get wood, Step one, get wood. Step two, question mark. Step three, profit.
Yeah, profit. Right. And that's really at the heart of this, right? So we are still going through with this lumber sale thing just to see what it's like. I don't expect it to be like a huge segment of my business, but it was like, it's just something interesting to try, right? So we're going down that path. I'm looking at the numbers and trying to figure out how this could possibly be a profitable business for people. Honestly, I'm spreadsheeting everything out. I'm looking at the cost of each board. I'm getting pretty good prices from Tim to then resell those locally. And I just look at it and go, this is also, keep in mind, as a business, this is coming from the type of business that creates digital assets and then is able to resell those things over and over without accruing the cost of production. So when you're actually selling materials, of course, profits are lower and it's not as clear cut of a profit. So I look at this as the content mindset, the content production mindset, and I look at this and go, that's so much work. That is so much work just to make X dollars on that particular board. So this is something I'm thinking about long term, if I actually want to even bother doing this, if it's worth my time to do it, because a lot of this is going to be done by Jason and dealing with customers coming in, getting things loaded up, answering questions about the wood. He's going to be taking care of most of that. So do I want him doing that, or do I really want him in the shop with me making our next video? So this got me to thinking, you know, two of my best friends out there, both in different ways, are dealing with lumber sales, and brings up the question, how do you guys, like, how do your, I know very different ways of handling things, and the scale is obviously different between, you know, McIlvain and what you're doing, Matt, with the slabs.
Oh, definitely.
But like, is this as low profit margin for everybody? It's just you're doing it in volume and you're doing it more efficiently than I would ever be able to do it, that it makes sense to do it. Like, what's going on here?
Well, first of all, Matt, don't sell yourself short. You have half the number of telehandlers that we do.
I'm halfway there.
You're halfway there.
Yep.
You know, just get like, I don't know, 6.5 million more board feet and you'll be right there.
I'm getting there.
No big deal.
Although, do you have half a million board feet inventory? I'll get there. That's how it works, right?
Mark, I can answer your question for you with two words.
Don't do it.
Tax deduction.
There you go.
I think, I mean, this is the part that I remember coming into the lumber industry from the perspective as a woodworker, as a buyer, mm-hmm. you know, as a consumer, and being shocked at the margins. It is not a profit margin business. Very, very tight margins. And I would look at like the cost of some of the material that we buy direct from a sawmill. And you're talking pennies on the board foot. And you're thinking, my God, you know, I'm paying $4 a board foot for this wood. And they're, you know, they're buying it at, you know, 29 cents a board foot. Then you factor in all the other stuff downstream, you know, the drying, the sorting, the grading, the sawing, the stacking, all of the stuff, plus the fact that your inventory actually degrades in value the longer it sits out in the shed. Mm-hmm. So once all that stuff stacked on top and you've added that all in, suddenly you realize if you're lucky, you're making about $1 a board foot. And usually it's less than that. These days, believe it or not, even though people complain about lumber being so expensive, these days it's probably more like 75 cents a board foot. And the magic in this, the answer is in transformation, which is why we see fewer and fewer retail mills selling rough sawn material. They sell S2S material, mm-hmm. you know, or skip plane material, or they're selling even more S4S material. That transformation can exponentially increase the cost per board foot or cost per board or linear foot, however they're choosing to sell it. But because they're doing it in-house, because that transformation can be done and can be done at scale. So we need to put our racks filled with, you know, 100 pieces of this walnut. I can very quickly, with a six-head molder, run, you know, 15,000 linear feet of walnut, you know, mm-hmm. with two guys, one guy feeding, one guy catching, you know, and that's it. And you've raised the cost per board or per board foot of each one of those pieces substantially over all the raw lumber. So it comes down to transformation. It comes down to buying it as untransformed as possible and doing as much transformation yourself. So, you know, that that, from your perspective, is probably not, it's not possible. It's not something you want to
do. It's also the opposite of what I want to do.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. Like in terms of what I want to sell, I want to sell the stuff that represents the stuff I have trouble finding. And what I have trouble finding is stuff that was cut, let's say an 8-quarter board that was cut as 8-quarter. It's already nice, you know, fairly straight, does it? It's not like it's warped and crazy, but it hasn't been touched much. And I can retain mm-hmm. as much thickness as I could possibly get out of it. That's what I want. And that's what I want to sell. But with your logic, it's like, that's exactly the opposite. If profitability is a factor here.
Well, it could eventually go the other way mm-hmm. where, I mean, because it is harder, as you just said, to find roughs on
stock. Scarcity, for sure.
Retailers are milling it, at least skip planning.
Yeah.
So maybe the irony will be the price will start going up for roughs on because there's not as much demand for it. So
right.
Now it's going to cost more.
Yeah.
I think you weren't starting this side of the business as, you know, here's a whole new line, you know, like matched chairs. Here's an old line where I can bring in profitability. This is more of a convenience, I think. Like, you need lumber, so why not bring in a bunch of lumber that you can pick and choose from for your own projects, and anything's left over could be an opportunity to sell a little bit here. I think where the end goal probably should be is the impulse buys. You know, you need to stock like packets of gum and things. People come by a board and then, you know, get some fruit stripe gum while they're
there.
Can
I interest you in a sticker?
Whisper of cat. Yeah, that's exactly. You know, you end up with a storefront to sell your Wood Whisperer merchandise because you're in a unique situation where I'm going to inflate your ego a little bit here. But as a kind of a woodworking celebrity, the people come to buy lumber from the firehouse to say that they were at the firehouse. You know, it's the same reason people go take the tour of the Lee Nielsen factory up in Maine. Mm-hmm. And most of them, when I've talked to the people at Lee Nielsen, like less than 1% of those people actually buy a tool. While they're there. Of course, these days, they don't actually have tools to sell.
They don't even have any.
They just go and they take the tour and they take pictures and they get a selfie with Tom Lee Nielsen or Danette Pulhowski. And, you know, that's what it's there. It's a destination. So you're a destination lumber yard. Ooh. So I think you need to take advantage of that by, you know, selling merchandising, you know.
Water slides for the kids. The
flamethrower. You know, the Wood Whisperer flamethrower, Wood Whisperer lunchboxes, things like that. You know, pick up a board while you're there. And at the same time, you know, Nicole's got her Glowforge cranking out, you know, while they're choosing the board, they can get a Wood Whisperer cookie with their name on it or something like
Go
that.
Go get a hot dog from Trixie.
Yeah, a Bort license plate or something like that, you know?
Now I get what you're saying.
I think that in and of itself, there's a line of t-shirts right there. Like, you know, get like a Wood Whisperer logo over the pocket and on the back it says staff, Trixie Spagnuolo or something, you know?
You know? Well, and I think that was part of the strategy when Tim and I first talked about this. It was like, if we are going to be this destination, we are welcoming people to come into our shop and hang out, and we do plan to have some merchandise for sale. It's almost the natural thing for us to have a little bit of extra material that if you want to just buy, you don't want to sort through a big pile of walnut just to find the one or two good boards there. Here are the two good boards, and it's not going to be cheap. It's, you know, it's going to be priced accordingly. But there it is if you want it. And it's not, like you said, something we're really depending on for income. It's almost a pet project of sorts, but it did kind of make sense. But even at that, when I started to do the math and the, you know, on the time it would take and the, you know, the handshaking, the like discussions with people who come in here and want to talk about the material, to just to move that one board starts to really go like, whoa, this really might not be worth it to do all of this.
Oh, God. When do I get to say I tell you so without being a jerk?
Well,
didn't we have this conversation?
Yeah, we did. But I'm doing it anyway. I mean, in spite of no matter what comes of this, we're doing it anyway. It's just, you know, got to see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I still think it's a good move because if nothing else, it's just it's that added convenience. It's a service. I mean, one thing that your business has always been about is giving back to the community. Mm-hmm. So this is just another way to give, you know, give back to the community. You know, they have to pay for those boards. They aren't free, folks. But
you know, here's how I give back. You give me money, I give you wood. Yeah, I'm giving back. I like that policy.
Rather than monopolizing this conversation, Matt,
don't throw me right now.
He's doing a laughing fit.
Riff for a bit. Riff
I'm not
for
in
a
good
minute.
Place right now to speak.
Let me stretch the taffy.
I think that the pitfall that will still come, you know, there's the glad handing side of things and getting to meet woodworkers and that type of stuff and kind of figuring out like hours of operation and knowing that while the lumber store is open, I'm not going to get as much done and that can be fine. Mm-hmm. But I think the harder part you may or may not have discovered yet is the managing the inventory because you're going to have some boards that just don't turn. And they're going to sit on that rack for a while, but like you're out of walnut
boards,
but you still have maple over there in the corner. So now it comes back to ordering, you know, and keeping that walnut bin stocked because that's what everybody's buying is walnut. Mm-hmm. That is a whole other job. Trying to manage inventory, managing turn rates and keeping the shelves stocked, based upon what's responding. And, you know, walnut may be selling like hotcakes right now, but nobody touches it next month. And now everybody's looking for white oak and you're like, I don't have any white oak because nobody was buying white oak before. That is the whole other job. Now, since your primary business is not selling lumber and, you know, paying the mortgage is dependent upon the lumber side of things, it's a little bit easier and you can say, all right, you know, maybe you can take special orders. If somebody comes in and says, I'm looking for white oak and you just don't have any, you know, you can contact your supplier and you can call the guy and say, yeah, I should have some in 2 weeks. Come back then. But like, how are you keeping track of what you already have? And when you sell it, like, how are you managing inventory and how do you know when to reorder and all that fun stuff?
Well, and the thing is right now there's so little inventory. We just didn't have the capital to invest a lot to get this going because frankly, we're out of money. So there just wasn't much to bring in. What we did bring in was inventoried. It's such a small amount that each thing, at least right now, was given like a number, a designation that we could reference and then keep track of. Yeah. Honestly, what's happened is I've started to build furniture and some of those boards, they may have disappeared off the inventory list because I ate them.
Oh, well, pilferage. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, that's where a lot of this will go is like, you know, how much inventory am I going to have? How many varieties will I carry? Because I really don't want to get nuts. I'm not going to be like the wood emporium of Flint Hill. Like that's not what I'm looking
Mark's
to do.
Wood emporium.
Yeah. We got everything over here. I'm probably going to start with focusing on cherry and walnut, the two woods I use the most. You know, and then if a board is just a misfit board that doesn't sell, cool, I'll take it and I'll do something with it. So yeah, inventory right now, very manual and very simple because it can be, because there's just not that much material.
That makes sense. Because that was the thing that really bit me when I was running an e-commerce store. Mm-hmm. Inventory was not an issue because we produced so much material. It was easy to get it, but then it very quickly got out of control.
Yeah.
It went from small to, oh, look, there's a place to throw stuff, you know, and there were boards just magically showing up on my rack because one of the graders, like, you know, specced it out and just threw it over. And I'd walk out there and he's like, hey, I had a whole bunch of boards to your rack today. I'm like, thanks, you know, like in a backhanded way.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot. Now I got to figure out what was there and what wasn't there. And, you know, I did the same thing by actually putting SKU numbers on every single board because that's how I was selling it, was by the board. You know, people weren't coming in and saying, I need 500 board feet, you know?
Right.
And honestly, that's becoming less and less common at retail yards anyway, because still most people don't know what a board foot is. And, you know, the fact that we have to explain so much what a board foot is tells me we should stop using that unit of measure.
For retail, but you would think.
It's a whole other issue. Yeah,
people don't know that language. So Matt, I want to hear from you because I think, you know, Grant, you're definitely on a much larger scale. But in terms of the structure of your business, you and I are very similar. Mm-hmm. And I have to wonder, why bother? Is there like a labor of love aspect to this or what's going on there?
So I think I'm kind of where you want to be, maybe.
Yeah.
If you want to think about it that way.
Oh, I can definitely say that.
Like that, huh?
Yeah.
I say that every morning when I wake up.
Totally accurate. Well, every morning.
That's where I want to be.
Back before I had kids and I had a normal job, I did the board selling thing. And it's very, very time intensive for we'll call it a relatively small ticket price at the end of the day when you're done checking them out. Like, it's not that much money as far as revenue goes coming in when you're selling a few boards at a time. So as I kind of reprioritized my life, became a father and started this business, I'm like, there's no way I can keep doing this by appointment, look at all these boards and buy 3 or 4 board feet at a time thing. So the way that I'm kind of, I position myself now is, I didn't back then, like, I didn't know anything about slabs. And now I kind of like slabs. They're kind of cool. And they mm-hmm. also have a higher per ticket price than just a board.
Right.
Which really yeah. helps on like the revenue side of like, you have to invest a lot of time turning that inventory, but at least the perceived margins are higher on slabs because someone's not coming to, going to buy 3 board feet from you. They're coming to buy 100 board feet at a time at 2 pieces of wood or 1 piece right. of wood or something. Yeah. So I,
and even though they've become really, really popular, it is still a niche product. Like there's a lot of lumber yards who still don't have slabs.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're unique ish in that. And I think you're going to be more unique as time goes on because most of the lumber yards are like, screw this slab stuff.
It's a lot of work.
Isn't that also at risk of what Shannon was saying of finding those misfit boards that just don't move because for whatever reason, it doesn't appeal
to them. Throw them in the fire pit, whatever.
Yeah.
But you know, you can discount them. You can cut them up and sell them as guitar bodies. It's another thing I've tried. That works out pretty well too. Like, hey, no one's buying this, but it's got this couple cool sections in it mm-hmm. that I can cut a small piece of stock out of it. Mm. And now it just doubled the value. Yeah, of selling that one board by selling it as two smaller guitar blanks. So there's mm-hmm. definitely like that's things true. You can do.
And that's an online thing too. That's a whole yeah. online market that you can tap into that reduces the, you know, one of the things I've always loved about woodworkers is they're super friendly, easy to talk to people. But when it comes to lumber sales, that's the worst thing. You know, the guy coming out and, you know, selling those two boards turns into an hour and a half of a tour of the shop. And what are you working on? And, you know, if I wasn't trying to build something over here, that'd be great. So if you can use that extra stuff and somehow package it into an online sale, you can avoid a lot of that.
Or you can just give it to them as like a bonus. And that kind of helps with like
sure.
retention. Maybe they'll come back a little more. For me, at least at this point, I don't do kind of as many sales as I used to because I've been so busy with other stuff. But a lot of my sales are all remote now, or whatever you want to call it. They're not local. Right. So most of my stuff ends up being shipped. And the advantage that I have is that all of my entire slab inventory is cataloged on my YouTube channel. Like every single log I've ever cut is there. So someone can go and be like, I'm looking for some ash. And I say, okay, here's the videos of me cutting ash that I have available. Either the whole bull is available or these slabs are already sold. And they can go through and be like, okay, I like this one right here at whatever time period it was, or if they have a slab number that I've numbered in the video, I want that one. Perfect. That's the whole shopping experience.
I didn't know you did that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's the other thing too, for me is I don't have an inventory of stuff that's dried and sitting. Mm-hmm. So if someone buys a slab through that method, that's when I take it to final drying. And then it'll be shipped out after that.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually want, if it's just one person buying one slab, I'm not going to go pull one slab. I'm going to be putting in a queue of when I have enough orders to then pull enough to fill a whole load and ship a whole bunch at once.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, most people aren't buying just one slab. I won't even ship one slab. It's not worth me palletizing with just one slab. So right. a lot of times they're buying, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And for most people, if they're going to be shipping it, they want to make it worth their while anyway, because the shipping is going to be like right. $800. Yeah. So they're not going to buy one slab. They want to buy a whole pallet of stuff that they can kind of pick through. And do the things that I love about working with slabs, and that's being able to lay out all your parts from one big giant piece of wood and being able to be a little more artistic with the grain and how you're selecting parts, you know, laying out parts in 3 dimensions, not necessarily having them in plane with the surface. You can put them on an angle to change the grain orientation so you have all that flexibility. There's a lot mm-hmm. of people who want to be able to do that, but they can't find these pieces of wood anywhere, or they happen to see a video and they absolutely love this piece of wood that some guy in Minnesota cut. And they really want that one piece of wood for this perfect project that they're planning in the back of their head. That's kind of like my little way of making it work for me, at least.
Okay.
Well, it's useful too, that you don't move into drying until essentially it's sold, because that's just better quality yes. control over the yep. long run. But it also eliminates the like just in time type thing that, you know, adds to the stress of that sale where, okay, I want that. I'm coming tomorrow to pick it up, or you've mm-hmm. got to ship it out right away. If it's clear up front that, okay, once you pick it, then I'll move it to drying. So, you know, I'll be in touch when it's ready to dry. It kind of slows the turn rate down a lot and makes it a little bit more manageable. And I think it's also more acceptable for your scale of business and Mark's scale mm-hmm. of business. You know, that would be completely unacceptable in my world.
Well, and there's also that really complain. Same thing you were talking about for me. I would imagine some of this is a little bit of leeway given to the fact that you're actually buying wood from Matt Cremona, like a guy that you follow on YouTube. Right. Like you want that board no matter what. So, okay, that's what I have to do. I have to wait. Fine. I'm curious. Do you charge up front for that to like reserve that board before you do any work?
Depends on the person, but usually some kind of deposit at a minimum, some kind of deposit.
Like for me, you would definitely need a deposit.
I was going to say the more appropriate question is, would you charge Mark a deposit?
Mark is charged extra. He has service fees.
I get surcharges. I don't know where. What are these surcharges, Matt?
At least
well, I've given that thought too. Well, one of the things Matt's, you know, not as far away from me as he was before. It's a day long drive. I may be showing up at his house with a trailer someday to stock some Cremona slabs.
Pull that trailer with all the wood I'm going to send back with you.
Ooh, that's a good reason to get a bigger truck.
See, there you go.
I have to rent something.
This is the problem with the one problem with the lumber business is it's very cash intensive. Because if you want to grow it, you need to reinvest boatloads of capital mm-hmm. to keep it growing.
Yeah.
Like you guys see how much I have invested in just material handling equipment. Like that just to move stuff around. Like that's just added fun cost of doing business.
Yeah. Yeah, wait until it starts breaking down.
Oh, I'm good. I'm good. Thank you, though. I'm good waiting. That's never happened.
Which is why we have two telehandlers, because the first one broke. We bought another one, and then we fixed the first one.
That's the backup one. I know,
Yeah.
Well, it's an interesting discussion. I'm glad we had it. And hopefully people, I don't know, just there is a eye-opening thing that happens when you go from being the shopper with all of your assumptions about why the wood costs what it does and what they should and shouldn't do. I wish they would do this.
I have such a different perspective on it now. The more time I spend like producing and selling lumber, the mm-hmm. more I'm like looking at other people's prices and be like, how the hell can they even sell it at that price?
How is that possible?
Right? How do they have any margin on that? What the heck? Yeah. But like years ago, I'm like, how can this cost so much? $6 a board foot. That's crazy. Now I'm like, $6, how the hell are you making that? How are you making any money at six? Knowing all I
definitely,
don't know.
Definitely changes your perspective for sure. Ah, good stuff. Well, hey, do you guys know who else sells wood?
A lot of people.
Matt Cremona.
Yeah. But also Rockler.
Oh yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
They got a wood section thing.
They actually do.
Like some stores have more wood selection than before.
Yeah. You know what? You know what's funny? We were looking at like competitive pricing and I was just like, I'm just curious like what they're charging for certain things. And I may or may not have gone to their website to look at their price list. It's good times. All right. Well, they're expanding. Rockler's expanding all over the place. If you haven't been to a Rockler store lately, you may be missing out. Rockler's been expanding and remodeling many of its stores throughout the country. The latest store opening was in October in Charlotte, North Carolina. In December, a new store is coming to San Antonio, Texas. You'll find an extensive lumber selection, top power tools and accessories, dust collection, router tables, T-Track, hardware, and more. They even host a variety of classes for woodworkers of all skill levels. Visit Rockler.com to find a store near you. No matter which store you visit, you can count on Rockler for innovative products, expert advice, and great service. Go there. Check them out.
And salsa.
And in San Antonio. Salsa.
Why do they like it? Because they like to say salsa.
Salsa. It's a wonderful condiment. Okay.
Okay. Well, this show, if all goes to plan, will be dropping the day before Thanksgiving. And you know what Thanksgiving means?
Turkey! It
means Black Friday's right around the corner. So, yeah. It really should mean turkey first, but according to my inbox for the last month, it means Black Friday.
Okay. Yeah, I saw, I think it was nothing but Lowe's, maybe one of the stores. Your Lowe's or Home Depot we walked into the other day, and they're celebrating Black Friday month.
Black Friday month.
Yeah, it's a whole month now.
It was literally a sign Friday in the month. Store that said Black Friday month. So
right, and I guess December is Cyber Monday month. It must not be. Sure how that works. Yeah, there's still only Small Business Saturday though. They only get one day. Stupid small businesses. Stupid. Anyway, speaking of small businesses.
Hey, I'm going to promote the hand tool
school because I am. Even the lumberyard I work for is a small business, to tell you the truth. So yeah. But yeah, I do one sale a year at the hand tool school, and it's on Black Friday. Well, technically it runs longer than Black Friday. I call it a holiday sale to be politically correct, but yeah, that's going to happen. And, it's the one time I do a sale, 30% off. I don't know any other details than that other than to say, go to handtoolschool.net and, you'll find all the details. Come Black Friday.
Okay. I'm going to pile on.
What is the hand tool school thing? Like, what can I learn something there? Do I have to go somewhere in person? Tell me more about the school that you mentioned.
You're starting a whole thing here, Matt.
Of what? Geez.
Of Shannon talking.
Good.
It's going to be extensive.
That's less talking for me.
We're going to get a saw sharpening lesson out of it, whether we want to or not.
Get some fleam.
It's going to get ugly.
Fleam. In short, Matt, it's a school, but it's online. You don't have to go anywhere, nor do you have to pay boarding. Plane tickets to get there, nor do you have to take work off in order to do it. And you can do it for a fraction of the cost of what it would cost to go somewhere to take a woodworking class.
Do you have like specific classes on projects, or are there semesters based on topics? How does it work, Shannon?
Tell I don't me understand about
how it works. Do I have to start a semester one, assuming there are semesters?
Matt, for you, you can start anywhere you want. You can start at semester six and go backwards.
If that sounds...
Yeah.
I can see reverse aging over time. That sounds fun.
Yeah. And Benjamin Button.
Some people do that with this show. You know that? I think it...
See, this is why I'm terrible at promoting my own stuff, because I'm already bored with this.
Fine.
This ad,
even I don't want to talk
shit. This ad sucks. This terrible ad read. Let's not do that again.
I know. I got to raise my voice a couple of times. Yeah. Go to the answer school. It's awesome.
It's the best. Oh, that's great.
Oh my God. I have to do a Black Friday ad now on the Matt Cremona voice read.
Yeah. Oh, please do.
It has to be done.
Please do.
Oh my God. It'll be such an inside joke, but it'll be well worth it for those who get
No one will understand.
I got the t-shirt.
My sales are going to go down because people are like, what is up with this weirdo?
I can't take it.
You're welcome.
That's good. All right. Well, I'm going to tag on to that. We're doing a guild sale as well for Black Friday. I don't know the details yet because it's a little early for us, but we will also be doing something at the Wood Whisperer Guild. And even our buddy Matt has some projects over there in the guild that will also be on sale that day. So go check it out.
And I will be doing free shipping on cheer kits.
Woo-hoo. Really?
Yep.
Hey, let me tell you something about those chairs.
Oh, God. You have too many of them? I have too many sets of them?
I have quite a collection. they're great, and I'm getting this new dining table.
That's where I was going. Okay.
Yeah.
I was a little worried.
Because right now, because of a mix-up, go back a couple hundred episodes and hear about the mix-up that happened, that I ended up with walnut chairs instead of cherry chairs.
I'm just gonna blame your mom. I just blame your mom. It's fine.
It's probably your fault. I mean, but whoa. Who is that?
That's on my end. That's Kenny Rogers.
Kenny,
the gambler. Hey,
he's the best.
No one to hold
he him. Loves walnut.
Come here.
No one to hold him. That's great. So
he
appropriate.
Just woke up out of a sound sleep.
Yeah.
I think he had a bad dream.
UPS guy is here in his dream. So anyway, these walnut chairs, they are currently sitting with a cherry table stylistically. I mean, I don't care that the wood is different, but stylistically, they don't match up. The new table is going to be walnut, and I think they're going to look, the chairs are going to look so good with this table. So they are going to occupy four positions, and I'm going to build a bench on the other side. For a nice complete set. So I'll send you a picture of that when that's
Please
done.
Please do. I'm looking forward to it.
Because it's a very versatile design that I think goes with a lot of different styles of table as well.
There you go. You heard it here.
Yep.
Or something. Or didn't. I don't know. That.
Or something. All right. Let's get to our questions, shall we? The first one here is from Ryan. He says, I'm building a new house and I just finished laying the hardwood floors. The flooring is 5 1/4 character grade cherry from Shioga Flooring in Ohio. While the character grade does mean that there are, is that a real term in the flooring industry?
It is.
I don't know anything about flooring. It just sounds like BS to me, but all right.
Well, it is, but
it's marketing.
It's official BS. Is what it is.
I mean, there is no such grade as character grade, but yes, in the flooring industry, not just flooring, people have been kind of stealing that, but yeah, rustic grade, it's, character grade.
It's highlighting the flaws. So we are character grade podcasters.
Oh, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay.
All right. So while the character grade does mean that there are some occasional knots and mineral spots, the vast majority of the boards are basically clear and would be perfectly acceptable for use in fine furniture building. There are some short pieces that are basically useless for furniture parts, but the average length is approximately 36 inches, and there are quite a few 8-footers in the pile. I have a couple hundred square feet left over. I'm really bad at math, I guess, and I'm wondering if you could offer some inspiration ideas, either for the full thickness boards, which do have the typical grooves on the back and the tongues and grooves on the sides, and some thinner stock. To remove the grooves on the back, I could certainly mill the boards down to a half inch or thinner for use as cabinet backers, drawer sides, door panels, and other things. But I'm wondering if you have any creative ideas for this very usable material. So all I can say, Ryan, is what I did when I had similar materials. I made a crap load of spatulas.
I thought you were going to say smoker. Smoker stock. Yeah.
Get a smoker, throw it in there. Done deal. This is the kind of stuff where, like, I wouldn't rush it. You know, don't rush into using it. Keep it around for a while, because that's what I did. And then eventually it came to me that this stuff was perfect for a thing. And that thing were these awesome little spatulas. And we just made a whole bunch of them, and it was from flooring. And the thing is, by the time you do get those grooves out and you cut the tongue and groove off, you are dealing with about half inch stock. So you're kind of limited with what you can do with that, but that's just enough for two of these tapered spatulas. And man, it's just a blast to make and a great use for that kind of caliber of material. So I don't know that you have a need for them, or you want to start selling some of those, or have a lot of friends and family that cook. Those are great. And there's other things you can make, other kitchen utensils you could probably make out of that stock as well. But for me, spatulas all the way. It was great. So, but again, don't rush into it. You might come up with something that you're going to be glad that you have those things on hand. So find a comfortable corner of the shop and maybe store it there for a while. Either of you have any ideas that jump out at you?
Cotton boards.
Well, man, I think
there you go.
He already said it. Cabinet backs and drawer sides, door panels. I mean, that's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
If you build a lot of cabinetry, having like a cool, you know, character grade for the cabinet back can be really cool.
Yeah.
Plus, like, the TNG is already there. You know, mill off the grooves in the back. You might just be left with a shiplap, makes things easier. But the other thing is, I wouldn't necessarily turn your nose up at half inch material. That's still a lot of material. You don't have to have 3/4 or thicker to make a cabinet.
Right.
Interior dividers, a lot of times it's a really cool idea to have a slightly thinner divider on the inside of a case. So maybe you've got 3/4 or 7/8 for like the outside of the box. But like, if you have multiple dividers inside, making that thinner, I just think looks cool from a design perspective. But also, if you have half inch thick material and you make it into a box, depending upon the size of the box, obviously, it can be really strong. Mm-hmm. Half inch is still very strong. So I wouldn't necessarily say I can't build furniture out of it because it's too thin. You'd be surprised what you can get away with. And in fact, most like kitchen cabinets use 5/8 inch plywood. You know, obviously plywood, very different story, but still they're not nearly as thick as you might think. So, you'd be surprised what you can get away with.
That's something that as I like to think of my design, like, knowledge base, sort of matures. Bad word for me. That just generally doesn't happen. Nothing matures with me.
Trust me, where are you going with this?
But as I look at,
I call BS already.
As I look at things that I made in the past, I've identified my tendency to overestimate how thick parts need to be and should be. And that as I try to like practice more restraint going forward, I find that, like, holy crap, that actually looks so much better and more elegant if I use a thinner piece in that spot, rather than always defaulting to going as thick as possible, or like every conversation starts with 3/4 inch stock. Like, rather than that, no, wait a minute, let's scale this down. Does it need to be that thick? And having moved all my furniture once again, I pay the price every time I move the furniture. And I'm like, this just doesn't feel like it should be this heavy, but good golly, is this thing weigh a ton? And it didn't have to. There's just no reason for it. So I agree with what you're saying, Jen, and it's something you want
to
think about.
To be fair, everything David Marks builds is pretty chunky.
Yeah.
So you blame David as your former mentor. Yeah. That's kind of his style, is chunky.
Yeah. I would still call him my current mentor. I still watch Woodworks. I love it. Got it on Plex. I queue it up when I feel uninspired and I watch that. It's great.
I need some of that.
It's true. It's an evergreen show. Man,
it's so good. And except for the fact that you watch it and realize that, I may have said this on the show already, but when I watch it, I feel like that it's so much information that where in the past I felt it was limiting in that 22 minutes, like, God, give me more, give me more. But in the context of today's content world, how did they get away with this much fine woodworking information on TV? That's true. It's crazy.
It's true. Definitely wasn't watered down at all.
Yeah. I mean, it was
way to go, David.
It was abbreviated, but
way to go,
David, in many ways ahead of his time.
It's templates.
Okay.
Templates.
Right. Templates and templates. MDF.
Oh, we're going to make a template. Okay. Make another template. Okay. We get it. You make templates.
All right, big guy with the templates. We got it.
Oh, man. Okay. So this next one is from Ben. I want to build a new front door for my house. I have heard several woodworkers talk about torrefied wood, and it seems to be a good choice because of increased stability and weather resistance. None of my local lumber yards carry it from an online search, and all I see is 4/4 and 5/4 for decking. Would torrefied lumber be a good choice? And do you know if anywhere that sells 6/4 to 8/4 lumber, or is that impractical due to cost, availability, etc.? I think
this is live. I love watching Shannon correct the spelling in the person's question as we're doing this.
I figured I was going to get a comment. Sorry.
Not even his question.
It is messing with me as I'm trying to read it, and I see the cursor thing moving around. And stuff's changing
as you're actively reading.
I'm trying to read it and pay attention to what I'm saying.
It's a Google Docs problem.
I've written no fewer than 4 blog posts on torrefied lumber in the last week. It's kind of on autopilot now.
Well done, Shannon. Way to go.
Everybody spells that word wrong.
Here, hold on. There's 2 spaces here. I'm going to clean it up.
Yeah, take it out.
There we go.
That was
something else is going on there with the comma and the I. Something's a period. Okay.
Okay.
Whatever.
All right. Continue. Sorry.
I think it's a good idea. I think it's a decent idea or good idea to try doing a door out of torrefied or thermally modified, depending on which camp of linguistics you want to side with.
Yeah.
They're 2 separate products. Get it right.
There you go. The deck that we added onto the back of the house, that porch area, I'm planning on using thermally modified ash for the decking. And as you'll see, those type of woods are a lot easier to find because the most common use case for those for exterior products is going to be for decking or some kind of like exterior trim type of thing. So finding thicker material is going to be a little more complicated. I used thermally modified ash to build an outdoor bench over in the Guild. You may have heard of it before. It's an online school where you can learn things from people mm-hmm. that maybe know things to teach you about. And I built a garden bench out of thermally modified ash. I used 4/4 and 8/4. And a lumberyard here in town, local to me, called Wood from the Hood, which does all urban salvaged lumber on a much larger scale than me, has a lot of thermally modified ash because ash is in abundant supply right now due to the emerald ash borer killing basically every single tree that exists. And they all need to go somewhere. So one of the things they've done to help move more inventory is offer ash in normal style and thermally modified style. So they have 4/4, 5/4, 6/4, and 8/4 there available. I don't know where you are. If you happen to be in Minneapolis, it's a short drive to the lumber yard there. Or maybe give them a call and maybe they'll ship it to you. I don't know. I don't know. Or maybe you give them a call and they tell you somewhere else you can find it near you. Or more specific search terms. Or something like that.
Okay.
Do you know, are they modifying it themselves? Or are they buying it from someone who's done the modification?
It's their own lumber that they're having modified at a modification kiln, which is a couple hours north of us.
Okay. That makes a lot more sense. Oh yeah, that one. There's not that many of
that
them.
One.
I know who we're talking about.
That one, okay. Yes.
Very cool. Interesting. Well, let me just add one thing to this. Matt hit it on the head with the fact that decking is the number one use case. Decking and like exterior siding, that's where it's all going. It's also more cost efficient to make that type of stuff. Because I mean, just like kiln drying 8-quarter, 12-quarter material is harder. Thermally modifying it, which is basically kiln drying on steroids, is really hard. So when you get to 8-quarter and thicker lumber, the waste quotient goes up pretty dramatically there. There's a lot of, it's very hard to repeat that process because you're raising this. Depended upon whose process, but the thermo wood process trademark takes it 270 degrees.
I can't remember now.
Maybe it's 315. It's high. It's very high. And they're injecting steam just like you would in a normal kiln dry process, but it gets so hot that you actually get a chemical reaction that like almost crystallizes the cells. And there's a huge amount of possibility for cell collapse or like case hardening on steroids that happens at there. And the thicker the wood is, the harder that is to do. So most places will do like most of these thermally modified kilns will do it on kind of a special order basis. So for instance, I've got some 8-quarter, 10 and 12-quarter stuff coming in right now that we placed an order for, I want to say 8 months ago. And it was just a matter of having enough to fill a kiln and then doing it all at once, knowing full well that half the kiln might be unusable because there's just so much stuff that goes wrong with that heavier stuff at those really, really high temperatures. So what we ran into is we ordered, you know, X thousand board feet, and it took them like 4 kiln loads to get that to develop that much because there's a severe amount of waste, which also we still paid for. Like every kiln we had to pay for the entire kiln. So like half the stuff we paid for, but we don't get to use, which raises the price exponentially over the 4-quarter and 5-quarter stuff. So then that you meet market pressure there because now you're saying, okay, I'm paying, you know, I'm just going to throw a number out, $6 for the 4-quarter stuff. And you want me to pay 16 for the 8-quarter? Like what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
But that's kind of how the math works out because the waste factor is so high and the time to develop is so incredibly long that you have some of these thermally modified mills that just say, look, we just won't do it. We're not going to do 8-quarter. Well, they may say 8-quarter, but thicker than that, they're not going to do at all. The other caveat I'll say, if you're looking at 5-quarter, it may not actually be 5-quarter. Because a lot of these modified mills are working in metric. So it's actually a millimeter measurement. And you may find that it's a bit scant, a 5-quarter. You're expecting, you know, a full 1.25 out of that. You may find that it's closer to like 1 1/8 because of, or because there's so much shrinkage at those high temperatures, it started at 1 3/8 and it came out at 1 16. Just ask George about the shrinkage.
Oh, yeah. He knows. Interesting. All right. Should I go to your voicemail now, Shannon?
Sure, why not?
Okay.
Why not?
Hi, guys. This is Eli in Jamaica Plain, Mass. I'm a longtime listener and first-time inquisitor. So this winter, I'm building a couple of stick chairs, and I want to use some floating tenon joinery to reinforce and or over-engineer the seat. The thing is, I'm nowhere near ready to buy a domino joiner set from Festool, available at Rockler stores and at rockler.com. I'm finding plenty of content out there about dominoes and routers and other advertiser-friendly solutions for loose tenons. But between now and whenever I go to the Cambridge Rockler to buy a domino jointer, is there anything you'd recommend for me and the $24 Mortise chisel that I picked up from my go-to used tool dealer, Tom Bruce?
All right.
Well, first thing I want to say to this is, Matt, pay attention how when he read the Rockler ad, his voice didn't change pitch at all. He just smoothly rolled right through it.
So that tells
me. But how do you even know it's an ad then?
Fair enough.
How do you disclose it? But changing your pitch?
Oh, he's an octave higher.
Yeah. Oh.
Clearly
Matt,
an ad.
Matt doesn't have to have FCC disclosures. We just know.
Hashtag pitch change.
Yeah.
That's great. It's the new thing. It's happening. Eli. Good question. First thing I'm going to say, and there was actually more to his voicemail where he talked about how the machines were making his neighbors upset because he lives in this, he shares walls with people in a what do you call it? Like a triplex complex or whatever. Here's the thing. If you're talking loose tenons, for the most part, loose tenons tend to happen in the ingrain of joinery, ingrain to ingrain. So chopping that up with a chisel sucks. There's no other way to put it. So what I recommend is put your mortise chisel down and pick up a drill, whether it's a cordless drill or a drill press or whatever, and bore out that mortise first and then move to just a regular bench chisel or paring chisel to square that up from there. A mortise chisel on ingrain is disaster. You're going to split the board. I don't care what you do.
The grain is straight on that board because, that'll wander pretty quick.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough.
Matt, if you're going to be hard, okay.
Well, another option is one of those beadlock things, also available at Rockler. Beadlock is a nice, secure way. You don't have to have a drill press. You can use a regular hand drill. The bushings guide the bit in. It grips it firmly. You're going to end up with really nice results there that, again, you can clean up with a chisel. If you're not talking about, I mean, and there are times when loose tenon might not be ingrained to ingrain or maybe ingrained to edge grain or something like that. Certainly chopping the mortise can be done there. But the rule of thumb I use when it comes to chopping mortises is if the mortise is wider than 3/8 of an inch, I always bore it out first. Trying to drive a chisel wider than 3/8 of an inch into wood also sucks. It's not fun. Unless we're talking timber framing and you've got like a massive, like 3-foot long, you know, timber frame mortise chisel, it's not fun to try to drive that much steel through it. It ends up folding the edge. You can do damage to the wood itself. So unless it's like 1/4 inch or 3/8 at most, I'm not going to chop it. The other rule of thumb is if the mortise is deeper than 1.5 inches, I'm going to bore it out first. Once you get below or deeper than 1.5, it becomes really difficult to actually use a mortise chisel to lever out the waste. And the biggest hindrance to chopping a mortise is the waste. It gets kind of stuck in there. And the more waste that piles up, just the chisel won't cut. The bevel, the wedging action of the chisel actually prevents it from kind of going in deeper. So you've got to clear out that waste. Well, when it gets down there really deep, it's really hard to get that stuff out without, you know, messing up the edges of your mortise. There are specialized tools called swan neck chisels, which were kind of made for this, but don't go buy one of those. Like they're so specialized and so silly. Just bore it out, bore out the most of it to depth, and then just come back and pare it. I think you could go, I mean, he already has some mortise chisels, so there's no reason you couldn't use those to square up the ends. But I think you'll find that the path to least resistance when it comes to creating mortises by hand is best done with a drill first, then clean it up from there. And that will also make the neighbors happy because I could run my planer downstairs and it won't bother my neighbors or my wife. But when I start chopping mortises, my wife starts banging on the floor going, shut up.
Yes.
That chopping mortises is a lot worse than any planer. Yeah. So yeah, bore it out, then pare it to shape.
There you go. All right. So last question. Well, more of a comment that we have here from Lee. Thought I would read it because it made me laugh. He says, I've listened to your podcast for a long while. Really enjoy it. You guys do a great job. Should be very proud of what you've created. One thing that I've been wondering, though, when Mark reads the ads, there's a shimmy, shimmy, shammy, shammy music that plays in the background. When this happens, I picture the lights dimming. Maybe a disco ball lowers. Could be that Matt picks up a tambourine, Shannon, some castanets. And I see Matt and Shannon standing doing that little solo dancing. Nothing too crazy, just, you know, some cool, focused, confident moves. And after the ad is over, the disco ball rises and Shannon and Matt sit down and you all just continue as if nothing happened. So does that happen or am I just imagining things? Well, the disappointing news is that we don't even hear the music.
Don't tell them what we're doing.
I'm giving them a peek behind the curtain. Yeah, the music's added later in the editing and we don't hear it until you hear it, at which time we generally do dance. And Matt does have a tambourine.
Except for the beginning. We hear the music at the beginning, the opening music. And I do tend to,
yeah,
you know,
that does help
throw some twerking in.
It helps get the mood going. Though. The problem with that, though, is we have so many different versions of the intro and I only have one queued up to get us going for the show. So we hear the same one every week. But when Nick does the editing, he rotates through all of our intros. So we don't know which one he's going to be using each week. Yeah. Good stuff. Well, thanks for asking. And, given us that little visual there, Lee. Appreciate it. Okay, I think that's going to do it for us, guys. Family owned since 1954, Rockler is your go-to source for high-quality and innovative woodworking tools, finishing supplies, hardware, lumber, and expert advice. Whether, you know what, guys? I don't hear the music now either. Whether you're building a simple bookshelf, a custom desk, or new kitchen... I don't hear anything. Or new kitchen cabinets, Rockler has everything you need to make your next project a success. You are.
Oh.
Hey, look at that. Can I tell you guys something? I'm secretly doing a project that I'm not documenting in any way, shape, or form. And I took a hammer to something in my kitchen last night. And I don't know if I want to talk about it because I destroyed something that looked perfectly fine, but I hated it. So I wanted to destroy it and it's gone now. Oh, maybe I should go to Rockler and get some supplies.
Thinking, what the hell could it be?
Like, I'll send you a picture.
Something you made for dinner.
Was her name Trixie Spagnola?
Okay. I'll tell you real quick. This house, I think they had, you know, like, I don't know if it was in the 90s, maybe the 2000s, right? In the 2000s, that sort of Tuscan style look that a lot of houses went for with those bold colors. The kitchen had this thing over like around the hood and around the range. And it essentially was two cabinets on the countertops to the left and the right of the range that then went upwards and arced across to house the range hood. Mm-hmm. And then upper cabinetry that hides the ductwork for the range hood. This thing is a monstrosity. I'm not that tall and I constantly hit my head on it. There's no usable space to the left and right of the range. So if you're like staging food to get cooked or taking things off the stove after being cooked, there's no room. And it's like cooking in a closet. It is the most non-ergonomic setup ever. And I got so frustrated with it last night. We had people over for dinner. As soon as everybody left from dinner, I had that hammer ready and I started to knock that crap down.
People over
down.
I was so upset. I made a scene.
It delayed my demolition. It was what I was upset about. There's a mantle. There's a mantle on it.
Wait, with
what are those fancy, what was that, a corbel?
A corbel,
little bracket support. There was a mantle on this thing and it was just gaudy, not my style, but most importantly, functionally speaking, a nightmare. And I took that stuff out and now I made it so that I don't even know what I'm doing next, but it's better.
But it's better. It doesn't matter, but it's better.
It is a mess, but it is functionally better than it was. So sorry for that detour, but you said kitchen.
See, I don't know. I think the mantle, that would be a good place to display that cast iron pan I sent you.
Bro. Yeah. Be a good the little teeny tiny one. Yeah. That would be a good spot.
Just set it up there.
It's about all the room I have up there is for a tiny pan.
That's it.
So yeah. But again,
this is the most organic ad read we've ever done.
It really is. All because we said the word kitchen cabinets.
Okay.
Technically.
Yeah. Raise your pitch, Matt.
Sorry about that. So,
sorry, guys. Okay. Go to rockler.com. Anyway. Use the code WoodTalk. All one word. Receive free shipping. I'm also ordering for $49.
Wow. You better finish it now.
Oh, okay. And remember to head to rockler.com/WoodTalk and enter for your chance to win a $250 gift card.
Yeah!
Wow. I'm not sure whether this ad is read by Michael Jackson or Mickey Mouse. One of the two.
I pitched it up.
By the way,
it's
way
up for you guys. Extra.
That's really an upgrade from the Wood Talk guys. They landed Michael Jackson or Mickey. One of the two.
Oh, that's great.
Oh my goodness. Right,
get us out of here, Shane.
Wow.
Please. Please
I think, get I think us we out better here. End this one. Honestly, folks, we would love to hear your experiences with like lumber pricing. Not like, let's not turn this into a rant fest, but does anything we said kind of resonate with you or shock you? I still get the feeling there's a lot of people who think the lumber guys out there are ripping us all off. So send in your stories and lumber related things. And you know, if you think that Matt should do all our ad reads from here on out, definitely let us know.
I'll let that job go.
We're coming up to like a contract renegotiation with Rockler. So maybe that should be kind of how we lead. Our opening salvo would be, well, Matt's going to read them all from now on. So
they go well.
Let us know if you
like
that.
I like that a lot.
But yeah, send us some voicemails or emails, folks, at woodtalkshow@gmail.com. That's where everything is. Go to woodtalkshow. That's where the show notes are. Yep. That's all I got to say about that.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you for listening, everybody. And we will catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. See ya.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.